Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I am just your typical Spike. On this very cold last day of 2017, I am joined by producer extraordinaire Cameron McCoy. How are you doing, buddy?
Great, man. I haven't shaved for like a week, and it's been fabulous. Like, I should never shave.
Yeah, that's very... Whenever it's 6 degrees outside, that thought does occur to you. What if I just never shave?
Right? You're going to need that hair. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and then August in the Midwest happens, and then you think, what if I were to just not have any hair?
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
If I were just to be perfectly bald and shaven on top of my head. So, you know, there's a lot of emotions going on there.
It's the Midwest.
It's the Midwest, right? Cameron, we've got a nice full show. We're going to, of course, talk about our weeks and what we played. Then we're going to make some Spike Feed New Year's resolutions for each of us, kind of talk about what we're looking forward to in the coming year, making 2018 a great year for Magic and ourselves. And then we're going to close out the end of the show just talking about looking back at games and movies. We're not going to have time to cover Blade Runner this week. however, next week we will definitely get it taken care of. Cameron, you played some Magic the Gathering this week.
I did, yeah. So I played Grixis Control in Legacy. And this is a deck I think I played about a month ago. It's running Young Pyromancers, Gurmag Anglers, a couple Snapcasters, and then just the who's who of what I consider some of the best instant and sorcery spells you can play in Magic. So it's a control deck through and through. I mean, you just wait for your opponent to do something, and then you're going to take control of the game, and then you win with Young Pyromancers or Jace. Some tweaks that I have done to the list, just looking at MTG Goldfish and what people are doing, because it is, I mean, it's not like four color check pile is still, I think, the best mid-rangey control deck that you can play right now in Legacy. But this one does put up some results. So some of the things that I've done, one, put a one of Hostage Taker in it. Just for whatever. I mean, I've saw some
That's
people
spicy.
Playing it. It is spicy, and I'll talk about that. And then the other thing is Punishing Fire and Grove of the Burn Willows combo. And just using that as like just another piece of removal. Because you really are going to be playing the long game with this. Like, I mean, it takes a while sometimes to win with a Young Pyromancer, but just having that recursion with Punishing Fire is actually pretty good. Like, I was surprised at how well that worked for a couple of my games. So I played, against Sneak and Show, four color check pile, Alluren, Death and Taxes, and like a Grixis Delver, four color Delver deck.
Cameron,
right?
Please tell me you show and tell in a Hostage Taker. Please tell me that happened.
I wish. That would have been so good. No. But being able to Hostage Take a Leovold is like equally as saucy and great. Loved that. So I don't know if Hostage Taker is like the card that you should absolutely be playing. It is definitely spicy, and a lot of people, you know, in the chat are like, what the heck? You know, like, they're like really surprised by that. And so in that sense, it's like really, really fun. But man, like the Punishing Fire thing, like, I think that is actually, it doesn't work all the time, and you definitely want to side it out against like Show and Tell. Like, I just don't feel like that's where you want to be playing. But when you're playing against something like Alluren or Death and Taxes, just having that recursion is just so good. And it's just nice to have a constant piece of spot removal once you get that combo going. So really had a good time. Culligan's Command still continues to be a house against, I thought I was going to side that out a lot. And against most of the field, at least one of those elements of it, I mean, you can always just deal two damage and then make them discard, right? Or destroy an artifact. It's so good in that sense. So, I've had a really good time playing that. Oh, I went 3-2. And so that's what I did with Grixis Control. Definitely definitely something it's worth your time and effort if you want to play a good control deck right now.
A few quick questions. So was this paper or MTGO?
This was MTGO.
Okay, and I assume it's a Deathrite Shaman deck, right?
No, it's not. That's the thing. Like, a lot of people are... Your mana base is much more stable. You're playing actual basics in it instead of having nothing but fetches. And in the sideboard is actually Blood Moons. So yeah. So I mean, it's definitely not your basic. I mean, it's like I said, it's put up quite a few results on MTGO, but I think four color check pile is definitely the better deck in a lot of ways with Leovold and Deathrite. But this one is just, yeah, you're going all in with Young Pyromancer and Gurmags.
So I just want to touch on Legacy really quickly, because before we went on the air, I was watching Andrea Mengucci, his version of Maverick. And I've heard kind of rumblings of more and more people playing four-color Maverick, where they play Leovold in the deck.
Everybody's
and then
own,
you actually go for Deathrite Shaman, and then it's not Noble Hierarchs, it's Birds of Paradise instead. Like, they play like one Noble as like a Green Sun target, but then you play some number of Birds of Paradise, and then, you know... It's interesting because one of the strengths of Maverick in the past was you were really good against Delver decks, or at least plus against Delver decks and plus against some of the combo decks. But one of the strengths was you just didn't interfere with the mana. And I've always erred on the side of making it more of a straight green-white deck. Mm-hmm. Like, I really don't like main decking Abrupt Decay in it. But some people are going far the other direction and making it kind of Maverick meets check pile. Which I think is super interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that, but it's a different deck. It's not Maverick if it's going that route, I feel. But
I mean, Leovold definitely has some strengths. Like, it makes your matchup against combo elves, for example, like a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
There are certain things that it actually shuts down. But I mean, we're also in this really weird phase where there's just not big legacy events. So the metagame is really nebulous. I don't know what to expect when I show up. And some cards, I mean, you know, we are not MTG finance guys, but some of the cards have gotten, like, really affordable. I mean, some of them are obviously reserve list cards, like the dual lands are still very expensive, but, like, I mean, Caracas, what has that dropped, like, $60 in the past year or something like that? So, I mean, some of these things have dropped significantly. So, Cameron, I want to talk about some standard.
Okay, I love it.
Paper standard, believe it or not. So, we've had an interesting relationship with Standard over the course of 2017. I would say I was in and out. And this time of year, as we've talked about before, is like not a really good time for me to play paper, except for when I'm on vacation. Store Championships, which was formerly Game Day, was Saturday. I think some shops are doing it Saturday and Sunday, which is pretty cool.
Cool.
I only attended Saturday because, I mean, we've got the Chiefs game today, of course. A buddy of mine was, you know, telling me to try out this store, and I drove down to it. And, you know, it's kind of one of those stores, as soon as you walk in, you're very aware that it's a tabletop game store and magic shop, because there are massive tabletops with war games and miniatures and dudes busting out tape measure. Hey, look, I want to give a lot of credit to tabletop war gamers. Y'all are putting in way too much effort for me. Like, when I see guys are like painting stuff and then they're both tape measuring things on, I'm like, okay, this is, that's a lot, right? But it was more of that. Whereas my traditional store, and I think this says a lot about the era that it was from, was a baseball card store and magic store. So that's the place that I normally play, which is pretty strange. But I immediately got the vibe that it's a little bit more of a casual store than I might be used to. Not in a bad way. Like, the players are super competitive and incredibly kind. But, you know, you have this moment where they start the tournament timer and or they start the tournament and then they don't have a timer going. You know, or whenever I present my deck to cut, more than half the players don't cut it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
You know, just that kind of stuff that... you know, as a spikier player, kind of bothers me. Like, I know you're trying to be kind and say, hey, no, you don't have to cut, but I want you to cut the deck. You know, like,
yeah,
it's important that we establish that routine. But Some very good players, some very kind people, and 20-some-odd people showed up. The winner gets an Ixalan playmat, like a map playmat. Top 8 got deck boxes. Everybody that attended got a promo, so it was a pretty juiced game day.
Nice.
You know, plus it was $10 buy-in, so there was store credit on the line as well. So just to go through it, I beat Mono Black, Green Red Dinosaurs, which was actually a really scary matchup. Because if that deck does what it wants to do, it will kill you really quickly. Now, if it doesn't do what it wants to do, it's just a bunch of dorky guys, you know. Like, usually if you kill one of their big dinosaurs, they're kind of just, that's it, it's over. Then I played the Rug Mirror. And I have to say, Cameron, so my opponent got a little mana hosed, and that's how I ended up winning the match.
Mm-hmm.
But for all this talk of, and I'm going to blame this solely on you, of course, for all this talk of Rug being a plague on the format, etc., to play the Mirror is not bad at all. Like, it's just magic.
Not. Yeah, yeah. It's really good magic. It is, yeah.
Yeah, it's interactive magic. And then I played the Mono Red matchup. I won that because I was able to break serve in game one. Like, he was on the play. I ended up having a couple removal spells. And then, you know, he was on the play game two. I got trounced. And then on game three, I was on the play. So I won. Like, he would have won the next turn. Not really the biggest fan of the existence of Ramunap Red, but hey, whatever. It is what it is. And it's a healthy presence in the metagame.
It is, for sure.
And then I lost to Black-White Tokens. Both times, he went, what is that, turn three, Hidden Stockpile, turn four, Anointed Procession. Mm-hmm. I mean, both times he did that, and my hands were just like a bunch of Long Tusk Cubs and Servant. Like, I never had a thing that could like get through that. And so I ended up 4-1. We went to top eight. And they were like, okay, there's the cut. So they didn't play it out. Right. They didn't do anything. They were like, okay, everybody's going home. And I was like, okay, all right. So that's cool.
Go get Chipotle.
Yeah. I actually went and got some chicken fingers, FYI.
Oh, okay, okay.
And I ended up winning a cryptic command for my trouble. And this was kind of the galling part. So the top eight got the promo deck boxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else got a pack. That's how they handled the prize situation. And so the guy that got, like, I don't know, 10th or something, mm-hmm. gets his pack, opens it up, Invocation Damnation. And I'm looking
That's
at
awesome.
My deck. Yeah. I'm looking at my deck box, you know? Like, someone came out ahead here, and it wasn't me. But anyway, really good experience, and it's probably a shop I'll go to a little bit more just because it's actually a really easy drive. It's between 35 and 40 minutes, which for me is great.
Yeah, seems like it was an afternoon well spent, so that's awesome.
Yeah, and dude, I had a really good experience playing Standard. So, I mean...
You know, that's my issue too. Like, I mean, I haven't been playing paper at all. It's all been online, but overall, I have a good experience. I just feel like... broken record, I guess. I just think energy is a bad thing. Bad thing for Magic.
I would love to know how many players out there, though, think it is by far and away the best deck, or there's a certain lack of innovation. Because I got to be honest with you, there was a Grixis control player that was just drumming Rug energy decks there.
Mm-hmm.
And I played against that Black-White's Tokens deck, Cameron. And I mean, I would classify it as a whoopin'. Like, I was never in those games.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, maybe there's a little bit more balance to it than showing up. Maybe there were a lot of people like me that thought, oh, look, Rug Energy is basically one of the best decks and it's not rotating. And so they just still have it.
It could be. It could be. Yeah.
That, or maybe it's a huge blight on the game and should go away. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
I wonder what people think. So anyway, Cameron, let's get out of this segment, come back and go over our New Year's resolutions. All right, Cameron, so headed into 2018, I know you're going to stay up late with all your socialite friends,
mm-hmm.
drink your champagne.
I might make it to 9:30 tonight. We'll see.
I mean, I really know what's going to happen is your wife's going to go to bed at like 8:30. You're going to play Persona 5 for an hour and then or Overwatch, and then you're going to go to bed at 9:30. Right?
That's like the best New Year's ever. I don't know what's wrong with that. But
you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Anyway, so we spent the last couple episodes really just talking about where we want to see Magic go, you know, specifically point at WotC. So this is going to be a little bit more of a reflective process, Cameron. This is more about you and I and where we want to be as Magic players. And maybe we'll accomplish some of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the weight loss plan only with Magic. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts, Cameron. Where are you at on this?
Yeah, first and foremost, goal number one for 2018. I'm going to sell off a ton of modern stuff that I have that I don't play with. I have, it's embarrassing, like five decks. I normally always default to like one or two of those. And
Jeskai,
I feel
right?
like I just, yeah, Jeskai or Blue White. And I feel like it's just time to, I hate to say it, sell off all the fairy stuff. Like a lot of that stuff still holds its value for whatever reason. I'm not playing it a lot, so get rid of that. Same thing with like essentially everything I have for like Grixis Death Shadow. Like I have almost all of that, right? Just get rid of it. So that's, I think, goal number one is to just, you know, I'm a big proponent of just use like only owning what you're actually using. And if it's just sitting there and collecting dust, maybe it sometimes gains value. I don't know. But a lot of the times they're reprinting the stuff, so you are losing value. It's time for me to just sell it all. So that's goal.
And you're helping somebody else out whenever you get rid of, whether it's your LGS yeah. or you're eBaying it or whatever it is that you're doing. Like, it's going to someone that's using it, which
for
is
sure.
a good thing.
Yes, absolutely. So, yeah, I would say that's like my big thing that I'm going to do.
And with this income that you're generating, Cameron, what's that
going to
go to?
Well, yeah, to offset that loss of cards, I'm going to accrue new cards. Mm-hmm. one of the things I do want to do, and it might sound dumb, but there are five guys at the shop who are like vintage players, right? And I've gotten a taste, and I love it. It's super casual. It's super fun, but it's something that I think I can just kind of hold on to for a long time, and hopefully it will hold its value as long as Magic's being played. And that's to like just buy some of the power cards, so or trade into a lot of the power cards. I mean, I feel like if I sell enough of my modern stuff and just do a little flexing maybe with my legacy stuff, I'll be able to get into, like, I think a fairly playable deck. I mean, I can always just have something that is with proxied up and whatnot, and that's totally fine. But I mean, I think, I don't know, that's something that I want to do. I think you can find cheap power stuff that I don't care how beat up it is, I'm gonna play with it. So that's a goal number two.
I think that's super cool. I mean, of course, I'm incredibly jealous that you have a community that can play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was talking with someone at the shop, this new shop I was at, and I mentioned that I play Legacy, and they were like, wow, you have the Moxes? And I was like, no, that's vintage. Like, there's not even an awareness. Like, it's such a standard-centric place, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, dude, bravo. Like, I want to see you at Vintage Champs, Cameron. I think there's no excuse.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, goal number three is to become World Championship of Matt. No.
I think that might take more than 1 year. I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah, yeah. But, no, one of the things I do want to do, just because it is such a great experience, especially because you and I get to meet up at these places normally, we get to just meet up with a lot of other people who are really passionate about Magic, is just to attend. I want to attend like two other major tournaments this year. There's one in Minneapolis coming up that I feel like we'll be able to go to and have a really good time. And then, I don't know, I might make just like a big road trip for myself and go to like a Star City event in Chicago or wherever, you know, like go a little bit out of my Midwest area and attend like a big old tournament and just, you know, sign up for the side events or just do the major tournament if it's something I want to play. But that's what I think I'm going to do.
Awesome, man. I think that'll, like, big events are always a ton of fun, and we've only done two together in like mm-hmm. 4 years.
Yeah.
A lot of that is also location-based yeah. problems.
Yeah.
But it'll be a ton of fun. So my New Year's resolutions. The first year, not that crazy. So I want to play Legacy, organize Legacy at least twice this year. I think if I look back last year, I played it twice. It's really easy for me to not end up playing Legacy because the nearest Legacy tournaments tend to be you know, at least 2 hours away.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the format. I love where it's at right now. I think the people that want Death Right Band are completely insane. I think it's just super healthy and in the Wild West, which is not something you get out of the other formats anymore, right? Everything, mm-hmm. even the limited formats, are pretty much solved after 2 weeks. And having this kind of, the history of Magic's open to you, and there's so much variety. It's a really great format, and I want to be able to talk about it as much as possible on the show,
mm-hmm.
Because I love it. And just playing paper more often. I got to be honest with you, Cameron, so I leaned really hard into playing digital Magic, more so this year than I had in the previous year. And what I found was I wasn't enjoying it as much. I really like playing in person more often. Some of that is a frustration with just the digital experience of Magic Online. But personally, I really have trouble giving my full focus to a digital Magic product and playing at the top of my game. I mean, my record in paper is a lot better just because the average player is on MTGO is a lot better. But here's what ends up happening. I'm on MTGO. I'm waiting for my opponent. Well, maybe I should answer a work email. Maybe I should. You see what I'm saying? And
yeah,
I just
yeah.
end up dividing my attention, or the wife comes in and has a question, and you know, I end up talking to her or whatever, and then I turn around and misclick. And I just don't, like, while Magic Online helps me understand the rule set and understand the metagame, I don't play as tight as I should. And that's something that paper helps me, because whenever I'm in a paper tournament, that is all I'm thinking about, you know, is that given moment.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I mean, not to get too much information into my personal life, but look, my son is, he just passed 2. And as he gets older, it's going to be easier for me to go and go play places where, you know, whenever, especially, you know, the first year, but also between 1 and 2, it's really hard to just be like, going to be gone for 9 hours. Yeah. See you later. The other thing that all ties into that, and this is kind of a lengthy thing that I thought about. So we really like Mana Traders as a service and being able to rent standard decks. And I know for you, that's like been a preferred way to play standard, right?
It's the only way this past 6 months. So yeah,
and it's worked, and it's worked for you, and I think that's super great. But my enjoyment of MTGO has gone down and down and down and down and down. Also, part of that has been like just getting a taste of another digital card game in Eternal, and I've had so much more fun. Like, I sit down and I have fun playing Eternal, and I don't get caught up in the win-loss stuff. And again, I can't talk about Arena, but I've been playing Arena as well. And so today, I'm deciding, Cameron, is my last log on to MTGO. I'm done. Now, does that mean I'm moving to Arena? Absolutely. Like, I'm going to play Arena, of course. But I've thrown away so much money on Vintage Cube and Throwback Gauntlets and stuff like that, because that's what I've been playing mostly on MTGO, and it's a value black hole, and it's not been that fun. So I just need to step away. And last thing I want to just mention, I need to actually show up to tournament with my stuff. I think this is me just getting out of the habit of being a paper player, but I'm constantly, hey, can I borrow your dice? Hey, do you have a token? So I need to be better prepared when I'm actually at the event, right?
Absolutely.
I always bring my Nintendo Switch, Cameron. Don't you worry about that. But maybe
that,
showing up with
cliff
the dice.
Bar, you're ready to go, but yeah, the dice, they're always missing.
You know that guy. And I'm that guy. I don't want to be. I want to be the guy that has all those things. So anyway, those are my big resolutions, Cameron. I feel like the look you're giving me says you think the MTGO thing is a big mistake.
I wouldn't say it's a mistake, especially because Arena does exist. I don't know. Like, for me, just being able to get reps in with Modern and whatnot, and I totally agree with everything you're saying. It is so like, last night I was playing just in the tournament practice room while watching a movie with my wife. Was I fully committed to either of those two activities? No, I wasn't. And so, you know, you make sloppy plays. You're not actually maybe learning or performing the best that you possibly can. So I totally agree with you on that. I just know my love hatred of MTGO is tenuous. We'll say that. And I agree, but I just having that extra outlet sometimes is nice. But you have that with Arena, so.
Yeah, and again, Arena's early. It's a beta. All those things. Mm-hmm.
There's always duels. There's always duels on the iPad.
No, but, dude, an Eternal has completely scratched that itch. I've had so, like, I just can't even begin to, and I really hope Arena grabs onto a lot of what they're doing with that in Hearthstone in terms of the psychology of play and how much mileage you get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it'll be as cost-effective as Eternal. Now, I should say this. In the Arena beta, there's no indication of what anything's going to cost. So you don't know how they're going to structure it financially. But with Eternal, I'm just so happy to give them my money because they're constantly just showering me with stuff, mm-hmm. right? And it's got that whole, you know, Blizzard does this with Hearthstone as well, is things go pop, things show up. Hey, can we give you this? Hey, can we give you... And it's just like this really positive feedback loop. And I need that dopamine. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, Cameron, we're going to get out of this segment, come back, and talk about other big things this year. So, Cameron, we're just going to talk about kind of our other recommendations, games, things like that, movies, TV shows. I have to ask you, Cameron, because I'm not the movie aficionado. What was your favorite movie this year? What would you put at the top of your list?
I have to split that into categories. Like, for me, the best-looking movie, I guess I'm going into a Blade Runner review, is
Blade Runner.
Is Blade Runner. Oh, my gosh. Like, the visual eye candy, the cinematography of Roger Deakins, who has done, like, Skyfall and all these other, like, great Coen Brothers films, it's absurd. And if that guy does not win his Academy Award for this movie, then there's something wrong with this world. So it is so beautiful. And, like, on that technical level, that's probably, like, one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed Get Out. Which was by it came out earlier in the year, and it's about the black guy who has a white girlfriend, goes to the
it's like a horror movie that's like a parable,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that one, and then
Mother, of course.
Mother, yes, no way. A Baby Driver is probably another one that's like up there on my list as far as flawed for sure, but overall just very much enjoyed it for the technical aspects as far as like original and just a zippy joyride. So there you go.
Yeah, I was just going to mention, because I haven't seen nearly the number of films that you have, but just the one that springs off to the top of my head that I can't wait to watch again is Baby Driver.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed that film. I like Edgar Wright's movies.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, Last Jedi. Like, I feel like I need space from Last Jedi to kind of fully analyze how I feel about it. But I did mention this to you before the show. Last night, for the first time, I watched Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets.
Hmm.
In terms of a visual accomplishment, you should see it. Some of the acting is just so catastrophically bad, it really sinks the movie. And the plot is, I mean, really basic, kind of sci-fi, like just kind of like The Fifth Element or something. Mm-hmm. There's no question about who the bad guys are and things like that. But on a visual level, oh my gosh. I read after the fact that he had to hire, this is Luc Besson, had to hire Weta and ILM to do those special effects because one of them could not handle the workload.
Wow.
And there's like two sequences in this movie that are just so incredibly just jaw-dropping. I'm kind of irritated. I didn't watch it in the theater. And then tonight I'm watching Dunkirk for the first time, which I'm really, really excited about.
Yeah,
so,
that's on my list of shame. I need to check it out.
And then, Cameron, I don't have anything interesting to say about TV besides, hey, Game of Thrones. I just started Marvel's Runaways. I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a good year for TV. Even Game of Thrones, which is like incredibly problematic, is still pretty good.
Oh, yeah. It's better than half the films you'll watch this year. So, yeah.
That also being said, the show of 2017, like the show of every year since it's come out, is Battlestar Galactica. still matters. There's a lot of messaging in there that still is relevant.
Absolutely, yeah.
Anyway, so video games is something we've been talking about a lot more, Cameron. So I'm interested to hear kind of, I mean, you played a lot of the best games of the year. So have I. The list, I don't know if you followed like what Polygon or IGN, but everybody's had difference, like differences.
Yeah.
And it's been jam packed. So what are your thoughts there, man?
Man, like for me, this was the year of the Switch. I mean, there, and that's so unfair to like the PlayStation 4, which is like in its prime right now, right? As is the Xbox One. And there's so many good, good games. But for me, the Switch was just this thing that I didn't know I wanted. And it because of that, it has exceeded expectations in so many ways. Not only with like its game catalog. I mean, we've had like one of the best Mario games ever to come out. We have had one of the best Zelda games since probably the Super Nintendo. You know, I mean, just like these other like random one-off indie things that just are perfectly suited to a portable sort of environment. Like that in itself has just been like the thing that I've just been kind of blown away with is like how much I enjoy it and just didn't realize it would just be a part of like my kind of game consumption habits. Mm-hmm. So that's like the thing that's like really like the big overarching thing for me of 2018. But there have been some games that have been just incredible. And, like, I mean, we've gone through the year just talking about, like, I just don't know how it could be, like, this year could be one-upped by March and by June and by, you know, April. I mean, just every single month had a new game coming out, which was awesome. So I am maybe about an hour away from finishing Horizon Zero Dawn. I'm on the last level. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny for me to have Zelda and Horizon Zero Dawn as like my top two games of the year. And they are. And they're so similar in so many ways. And they're these giant, sprawling, open world games that just have seemingly endless things to do. And they are so incredibly fun. I have not been so... The mechanics of Horizon Zero Dawn are just so tight and so refined. It's like the purest expression of like what an open world game in 2017 ought to be. Just if you will, like take everything from Assassin's Creed and like Oblivion or like, you know, like the Skyrim games, Witcher, or whatever, and just put them all together. This is like distilled down to like, here's what works perfectly. Is the game perfect? No. I mean, like, I hate the climbing mechanics. They needed to fix that and just do the Zelda thing where you can climb on anything, right?
Right.
But man, so gratifying, so satisfying. The story is really, really good.
I was going to say, have you gotten to like the part where you're just like listening to a ton of story? Like, it's really engaging.
It's dense. The audio logs are all interesting. The holographic things they're doing. Yeah. So... those are the two games that I would say they're so similar yet so different in like what they're trying to do with an open world game, where I think Zelda's definitely more innovative, I think, in like what it's doing. And like, this is the way a lot of video games are going to copy this moving forward. Whereas Horizon's just like distilled. Here's everything that's come before and we're putting it into like a perfect package. So super good.
Yeah, what I think it was the Polygon review said, Horizon Zero Dawn doesn't reinvent the wheel. It seeks to make the perfect wheel.
Yeah.
And I think that is a pretty good expression of it, right? Like, there's nothing there that you do and you're like, oh, this is new. It is just like, what if they do everything better than everybody else? In terms of, you know, the tall necks are way better than anything you do in Assassin's Creed in terms of climbing. The combat scenarios are so much more tense and engaging than anything you do in Assassin's Creed, right? But the mechanic is the same. You still do the whistling and all that.
Yeah.
So it is so difficult to choose between those two. You really wish those two games could make one amazing baby of a game.
They will in like 5 years.
But they will in like 5 years. But here's what I would say is both of those justify the purchase of the system. Like, they're both that good.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I would say is different is Zelda, the key to enjoying it is not looking up a guide. If you just go into Zelda to experience it, that is where it just, man, there's a magic there that is so hard that it just blows past all of the other open world games, like when they're like, hey, see those two mountains? You got to go between them. There's not an icon on a map. There's nothing. You just see them in the distance and you got to walk between them. And I'm struck because I'm playing Skyrim on Switch,
yeah,
and I'm constantly jumping back to the map and creating an icon and trying to figure out how to get there. And then it's like, man, in Zelda, I just went, man. And it's impossible to talk about Zelda without sounding like just the hugest hippie. Mm-hmm. But it is just like this, you know, experience of that environment that is just really special, that really blows past their, I would say, very average combat and incredibly stupid weapon system.
I
still have yet to hear a convincing argument. Like, the rain making you slip and stuff, like, I can at least see that, even though that inconveniences you, how that, like, builds environmental understanding.
Yeah.
Like, the good suck, if you will. But the weapon thing is just, like, if that were pulled out of the game, I would be so happy. Even the, like, when you get the Master Sword, you're like, oh, sick. There's no way the Master Sword's going to break. Oh, you lost your charge. Cool, cool. Couple other games to submit to you for GOTY stuff. The big game that I think is being missed by everybody is Neo. I think game is a lot better, and it's kind of victim of the fact that it came out in like February. But I mean, I put 80 hours into it or something.
Yeah. Talk about a perfect expression of like combat, right? I mean, because I mean, I think that came out at the same time as Zelda.
It was like, and, right, like,
I was
like
so
2 weeks
frustrated
before
with Zelda's combat, when you're like, this is like perfect combat right here. It's like Ninja Gaiden meets
Demon
Dark
Souls,
right? Yeah, yeah. So.
Yeah, and while the story is like just kind of Japanese mysticism that doesn't have a really clean, clear through line, man, I tried to go back to play a little bit of Bloodborne, and I found it completely unplayable because the combat in Neo is so much more tuned. Anyway, so Neo, I think, is a big one. One that you and I didn't play that is like showing up on everybody's top 10 is Nier Automata.
It is sitting in my wish list right now because, yeah, everybody's talking about that one. It looks good. It looks really good, and I missed it completely.
Yeah. The one that I have really, and I haven't really gotten a chance to talk about it too much, is Cuphead. Cameron, and as a retro gamer, I feel so torn because there are things that I super duper love about it. And you will hear people say, oh yeah, it's really difficult compared to, like, if you play NES or Super Nintendo games regularly, it's not that difficult. Like, because yes, there's a pattern recognition thing, but you still have, you know, all the modern trappings are there. You have infinite lives, you know, so you could just play something, you could play a boss 1,000 times in a row and it would be fine. What I don't like about it is, there are levels that are not boss fights, that are these what they call run and gun levels that try to be like Contra. And I find those levels to be just not great and actually just really frustrating platformers. I also find that the Xbox controller is really bad for 2D games. I've really struggled with it. Those things aside, you should just play Cuphead for the art style. It is such a cool looking game. They also do this thing where, you know, a good parallel is Donkey Kong games, where the bosses are very difficult, but they have very specific patterns. But Cuphead doesn't do. Cuphead has very specific patterns, but they randomize the order of them in an effort to try and get you to get replay value. But it ends up becoming very frustrating because sometimes you just feel like you won because the random order worked out in your favor. Does that make sense? Of what the boss's attacks are. And sometimes you get a random order that you're like, I don't know how I could have ever gotten through that. I'm sure I'm going to get some message that'll be like, try sucking less, noob. You know, but whatever. The other game that I think is really interesting to talk about is Wolfenstein 2. Because I don't know that it's, from a gameplay perspective, really that worthwhile. But from a story perspective, first of all, stay away from any spoilers. But the last 6 hours of that game, my jaw was just on the floor. I just couldn't believe the things that they were executing inside of a game's narrative. To give you an idea of how shocking it is, Giant Bomb, in their Game of the Year awards. They have a Best Video Game Moment of the Year and Best Video Game Moment in Wolfenstein 2 of the Year. Like, they had to give it its own category.
That's awesome.
So those are the big ones to play. But and then PUBG, of course, everyone's talking about, but I mentioned that last week. So that's a lot of Game of the Year content, Cameron.
It is.
A lot of the year.
Good year to be a gamer, for sure.
Good year to be a gamer. Good year to be a TV watcher. Maybe not the best year in film.
No.
But that's
okay. It's been a slow decline, but it's fine.
Yeah, right? Anyway, Cameron, if someone would like to chat at you about any of these things, they can find you on Twitter. Where?
@Cameron_McCoy.
I am @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeFeedMTG. We'll check you guys next week.